Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to your program right after this short word from our sponsor.
In your company, a challenge? Are you battling turnover and struggling to draw key talent? Is your team not performing at the level you want? Problems present themselves through conflict, miscommunication, creative differences, unclear expectations, and motivational issues. ARC Integrated is here to address these challenges through executive coaching and customized interactive trainings. Create lasting positive change that will improve your bottom line and create a culture that attracts talent and reduces turnover by going to arcintegrated.com. That's arcintegrated.com.
How does an economy that is more mindful and less mindless become a reality? Welcome to the Mindful Marketplace. I'm your host, Joel Skeen, and I'm happy to welcome you to the show where we ask experts, entrepreneurs, investors, and industry leaders for their perspectives on how all of us can, on every level, do our part to help create a more mindful marketplace.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Mindful Marketplace. My name is Joel Skeen. Really happy to have you listening in here. I am really grateful to you, the listener. I know there's a lot of content options out there, and the fact that you take any of your time, which really, you know, time really is the most valuable resource you have. You know, money's great, houses are great, but at the end of the day, if you don't have any time to do the things you love in life, you don't really have much. And so the fact that you're taking your most valuable resource to spend it here with us today means a lot to me. I don't take that lightly, and we do our best each and every week to bring you the absolute best product that we can here on Biz Radio US and on the Mindful Marketplace. I'm pumped about today's show. We got on Bruce Waller. He was actually the first guest that I had on after my introductory episode because he really, I just see what he's doing in the community. I see what he's doing with his business. I see what he's doing with his nonprofit organizations. And he, to me, really is one of the highest examples that I see out there of helping to create the mindful marketplace that we talk about here. And so really excited to have him back on because we're going to get to dig into a bunch of stuff we did not get to last year when he was here on the show. And it's going to be a good one. So before we do get started, though, I do want to let you guys know about a few events coming up. There's a few dates coming up that we're going to be doing some My agency, the Skeen Agency, we help families eliminate their debt. You know, we're not talking about refinancing their debt. We're not talking about negotiating their debt. We're not talking about consolidating it. We're talking about helping them actually get out of debt so that they can invest in their own community, they can invest in their family's future, and they can invest in themselves. It's kind of hard to do that when you're stuck in the mud of debt. And so we are going to be doing some free educational workshops that teach people different strategies on how to eliminate their debt faster without having to spend extra money. And so we're going to be coming up with those. There's going to be one coming up in mid-March as well as one coming up in April as well. I'm going to be getting out the exact dates on that. It's a little tentative at this moment, but you should go to mindfulmarketplaceshow.com. And there, not only will you be able to find out information about those events, but you'll be able to see all the episodes that we've done going back to May of last year, including Bruce's first episode, which I highly recommend you go listen to hear more about his background, his story, and his business with Grind Coffee and Grind Fest. But go ahead and take a look at mindfulmarketplaceshow.com. There is a button there that says eliminate debt if you are interested in those debt elimination resources, as well as, like I said, all the other episodes, as well as my blog. And I don't know if I've, at this point, actually pointed out the website too much of what all is on there. But yeah, I'd encourage you to go check that out because there's going to be something there. If you resonate with what we talk about here on this show, there's going to be something there that's helpful to you. So before we get into our conversation today, I want to talk a little bit. So, you know, this is going to air a little later, I know. But at the time of this recording, this is Tuesday the 17th, which is the day after Martin Luther King Day, which is, of course, as we know, a day that we set aside to honor the legacy and remember the great Martin Luther King Jr. You know, after being on, you know, I try to stay away from social media as much as I can, but, you know, after being a little bit on the different social media platforms yesterday and in this social media landscape and kind of soundbite culture that we have, I found it a little sad to me how much of how such an incredible and fierce organizer that was Martin Luther King Jr. gets diminished a bit into a few generic quotes about love, light, and dreams. And what ends up being ignored is what his dreams actually were. The scholar Cornel West calls this reduction and misuse of MLK Santa Clausification, which I think is really catchy and kind of sums up what we mean. It's the portrayal of King as a, you know, celebrated consensus seeker asking for common sense racial reforms rather than as what he actually was, which is an anti-establishment radical calling for economic justice and an end to the war in Vietnam. And it downplays the trials and the risks that America's most revered activist took to live according to his own conscience. Now, while the consensus today is that he's a hero, at the time of Dr. King's murder, no one was building statues of him in the Capitol. Corporations and marketers were not using him for PR purposes, and the military certainly wasn't promoting his image on Twitter. But he was a hero in the deepest sense of the word. The last years of his life were not marked by popularity and victory, but rather by hopelessness, failure, and impending doom. He was hated from all sides and under very real threat from violence at every turn. The FBI was wiretapping his phone calls, planting operatives within his volunteer organization, and even sending anonymous letters urging King to kill himself. He lived under the specter of constant death threats and was even warned by the FBI and local police to stop appearing publicly, effectively to stop doing his work. At the same time, he was demoralized by his own ideal and efforts of nonviolence as the method for achieving his goals of justice and peace. Riots broke out first in Newark, New Jersey, and then in, you know, my hometown of Detroit, Michigan, which spread over to 125 instances of public violence and riots across the country. The black establishment insisted King was going too far, while the young radicals criticized him for not going far enough. And King himself, who was plagued with depression from a very young age, saw his life's mission of a free and equal black people failing. Hopelessness touched our hero's heart. He ruminated on death constantly and had trouble even getting himself to board the flights he needed to get him to his next speaking engagements. And yet, the night before his murder, Dr. King delivered one of the most inspiring speeches of the 20th century. Here's a bit of what he said. "Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't mind. Like any man, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will, and he's allowed me to go to the mountain, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man." So the legacy that each of us can and I think must carry on is King's ability to create hope out of despair and lift others with us along the way. It's what makes him one of the great leaders in American history. And in the coming days, years, and centuries, we will need more than great leaders to give us true hope. We got to tap into it for ourselves. This life force of hope isn't just for people who we think of as leaders. It is in each and every one of us, and it wants to develop into the next generation of heroes. And we can't wait any longer because we are the ones we've been waiting for. And someone who I see pushing forward with hope, even when things get despairing, even when things get tough, is our next guest, co-founder of Black Wall Street, Grind Coffee, the only black-owned coffee shop in Western North Carolina, as well as Grindfest, an active community member. Bruce, thanks for being on the show today, man. Really, really glad to have you back on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to be back on here, Joe. Awesome.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Like I said, go back and listen to that episode with Bruce. It was one of the very first ones. You can find it on my website. But if you could just take a couple minutes to kind of give us a little history of your background, where you came from, and what you've been through that's brought you up to this point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I guess, you know, and as the last one we did, most definitely, like you said, check it out. Most definitely laid some things out there. But I'm from Richmond. I've been in Asheville about 10 years. But I'm from Richmond, Virginia, and moved here due to the military. And some community work I already had going on here just through some of the friends of family that I had here in the area. And I I got here just by way of just developing and become a better individual, a better person. And I'm staying here. It actually wasn't it was supposed to be a long time. But I stayed here because I just found a home in this space. And Asheville became my home. And so in my 10, 12 years of being here, I have developed a whole lot. I come from a background of, believe it or not, singers. My family, the Waller family, they are a bunch of singers. They call them the Fantastic Waller family. And they sung in, I think, 49 states, 7 countries, and they traveled all over doing that. So they were a pretty big deal. I think they had some record companies on the table, record labels on the table, like RCA at the time, Jive. A few people wanted to have them. So I got to grow up to experience a lot of different stuff when it came to my family, because they did that for 40 years. Just wow. And it was all brothers and sisters, my uncles and my aunts and my dad. So I come from that, and Richmond, Virginia has been home to me majority of my childhood, and then I left to go to Texas. And that's just kind of a little bit brief about me. What I'm doing today as an entrepreneur, I kind of always had that knack because it comes from my family. And, you know, it was just due to time and waiting for, you know, things to develop that I really was able to dive in to really start some really powerful work that we're doing today. And so I'm excited to be here. And that's just a little bit about me. I got brothers and sisters. Man, I got a big family. I just went back home for the holidays and was able to see a lot of my family. We celebrated me and my wife's 5th year anniversary with family, and we did like a big old party. It was cool, and it was called the Winter Wellerland. Yeah, it was fun. So,
yeah, I didn't know that about your family. So you got the music in you.
Yeah, it's in me. Believe it or not. The part that rubbed off on me was like the dancing. So I used to dance a lot, actually, and danced all over. that's a part of my DNA, and some songwriting. I did write a few songs, but there was never anything I like dove deep into. The thing that was the most prevalent in my life was dancing. So that's awesome. Expressing myself was always a needed and a must. And I still, you know, cut up the rug a little bit here and there, and I teach some folk, but I'm not into it like how I used to be.
Well, I think there's something to that about, you know, knowing how to express yourself through mm-hmm. some sort of art form that can translate into business. You know, I myself am a songwriter. You know, if you ever do record your music, you should throw it up on Buzz Radio Asheville, our sister station. It's all local music. Yeah, all local music, all originals. You should check it out. And everyone out there should check it out, honestly. You know, I think that there's some kind of connection there between, you know, expressing yourself through some sort of art form and then expressing yourself in business and in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, we know that you started Grind Coffee in the middle of the pandemic, like in the height of it in 2020. You opened up a coffee shop in River Arts District. We know that you've expanded that out to Grindfest, which celebrates local businesses in the community every summer. And, you know, I got to go down there this last year, and it was a blast. You know, the music, the businesses, the art, the roller skating that I saw going on. It was a lot of fun. But I want to talk with you today a little bit more about this other project that you and your partner, Jay Hackett, have been working on called Black Wall Street. So first, I know that this wasn't a brand new idea. It's not like Asheville, you guys created the idea of Black Wall Street. Right. Could you key us in a little bit about kind of the history of Black Wall Street and where it comes from?
Yeah, so just give you some context on kind of like how everything started. Just long story short, as far as from Grind to Black Wall Street becoming his own project. So actually, Jay and a guy named Gene Edison, I don't know if you know Gene Edison, they started the Grind, but they came to me pretty early phases as they were building out and preparing to handle a lot of their branding and marketing. I have a digital marketing agency called Kairos Digital. Mm-hmm. And they were like, hey, Bruce, we really want to get this word out here about what Grind is doing. And this is at the time they contracted out with me as a marketing agency. So I found out a lot of details about what was going on. And I drove with one of those mottos or one of those narratives with Grind was the first black coffee shop in Nashville. We did not know that. And so that really like caught fire. Cause in the midst of that time, you're talking about September, 2020, you know, just shortly before that was the George Floyd and, you know, these different things that were happening to black people, were really like, front and center. COVID was on the rise and there was a lot of people hurt, especially in the African-American community, BIPOC community as a whole, black, indigenous, and people of color. There was a lot going on all across the United States, and the media was just really exacerbating the problems that we already had, but now it was shared across the world. And when Grind came to be, it came at the right time. It was a place where two felons decided to come together and open start something. When they came to me, I was like, man, we have to really, really dig deep with this. And then shortly after, Grind became to be. And first day, we had a line out the door. I mean, you're talking about Mr. Kobe. Yeah. We had a line out the door all the way down the street. And we had a lot of different people come in. And I quickly found out that Grind was more than just coffee. It was something so much more. We had a co-working space, yes. We had pastries and coffee, yes. But I really quickly found out that it was a community hub and we had something special. So I began to build out this social apparatus, so to speak, to really galvanize and move people into a mission and a cause. Shortly after that, Jay came to me and was like, hey, I'm thinking about this idea. And he began to present to me an idea with the Black Wall Street. And was very in his embryo phase. He had already wrote up some things and we did win some money to start it. And the goal was just to get 20 black businesses and to collectively raise $250,000. At that time, the former business owner did decide to leave, and I took that space 3 months into that business. And then shortly after that, Black Wall Street came to be. So I shifted in from contracting as an agency to actually bringing my agency into that location as an owner. With Jay Hackett. So me and Jay Hackett, and we decided to dig in deep to really like open up the space. And Black Wall Street just added that extra special layer to the work of like, we're two black business owners. We don't come from the sharpest past. We don't come with a silver spoon. We have hard knocks of life. And to be able to present that to the world, to other individuals, really opened the door for us to create something special. So Grind is like that front entryway into something so much more. And that was where Black Wall Street came to be, our first project. And it just, and I'll get deeper to it as we go along, but there was so much that came out of that because the people of color were looking for an outlet, a way to express themselves and wanting to win. And one of those things, according to studies all across the map, just studies when it comes to the economic terrain, for black people, the quickest way to wealth is through entrepreneurship. And that's just the fact. There, you can't get it through the corporate ladder. You can't get it as an hourly worker. For us, any other route that we decide to go to was working for yourself. And so when we found out the disparity report of what black people were experiencing and even BIPOC people were experiencing, is that we quickly found out in order for us to really achieve freedom, you have to have your own ecosystem. You have to really open up the door for your own economy and to thrive with other like-minded individuals in this world. So
yeah, now, it sounds like and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like what you're saying is that entrepreneurship avenue for people of color and people who have experienced discrimination is there because is that just because the structures that are in place in the kind of the corporate ladder prevent people from really going up, or is there more to it than that?
I mean there's a huge part of it. I mean, you're talking about our isms. Racism is a huge part of it. It's actually the very bedrock of a lot of things. It's the bedrock of America. When you think about how America was built, how this corporation was formed and created, it was for people at the top to stay at the top and people at the bottom stay at the bottom. And at the very bottom of this hierarchy are African Americans due to the nature of how it was built. Now, there were other layers of dynamics added over time. But when we talk about how the existence and creation of how things were created, I mean, we were viewed as chattel, which is no different word for than a cattle or for cows. So we were looked at as one third of a human, in constitution. And so we didn't have a right to vote because we were not viewed as people. We were viewed as chattel. We were viewed as a livestock. And so when you think about where we are today, 300, 400 plus years later, we're here due to the fact of how America was built. And that's just the God's honest truth. I mean, there is no fact around that. There's total facts around it. It happened. We're here. And so when we look at how everything is built, it is built for a specific race of people to stay at the top. And in anything that doesn't look like that, there's a hierarchy from lightest all the way to darkest. And that was even built into science in the 1800s. So it goes deep. I mean, the science goes deep. So when we talk about entrepreneurship, it was the only thing, even when Jim Crow was in existence, even when slavery was a thing, when we looked at where we started working for ourselves, we had the most success, and has always been the case. To be not victimized to another person's system, to not be ostracized due to the fact of the color of our skins, or demonized or criminalized, we were able to have much more success when we worked for ourselves. And that was very evident when some of the Black Wall Street started to come into formation in the late 1800s, And so when we were released from slavery and we had all the skills, white body people had to contract out with us to do the work that they did not know how to do because we always did it for free at the time. And so it has always been successful for us. And it's not saying that people can't win working in a job. I don't think anybody can really get super rich. But we think about how jobs were created and formed. Some of the industrial age, we're more stepping into the technological age right now. But people that were, the baby boomers and the generations before, had pensions and 401ks, and you had different things set up and you could retire comfortably. Working in a job, and that was predominantly, people of color wasn't in those spaces to win like that. But the most success we have always seen was us working for ourselves.
And so I think that makes perfect sense because, like you're saying, you're taking your power back. You're not just accepting the structures that exist. You're going to say, we'll create our own businesses. Sure. And so I think that, that to me really kind of probably gets to the heart of the why of what you're doing, of why you're doing the programs and the events and the promotion that you're doing with Black Wall Street. What I'm excited to get in with you about in our second, in part two of this episode, is that we're going to get into the how. We're going to get into the what are you guys actually doing on a day-to-day basis? What do those programs look like? How are you making that progress, and what's left to go? Yeah. So make sure to tune in here next week at the same time to get the second half of this episode. I'm really looking forward to diving in with you here, Bruce, on it. As always, make sure to go to bizradio.us to listen to this show, as well as lots of other great hosts, as well as, check out, like I said, our sister station in Buzz Radio. But what we're going to do is we're going to take a break, and then Bruce, we're going to come back and record the second half of this conversation. Awesome. So please make sure to tune in next week. Same place, same time. And again, you can also connect with me directly at Mindful Marketplace Show Bruce.com. Thanks, Bruce. I'll see you on the other side here. Looking forward to finishing this conversation here with you.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.